Rick Phelps is the director of the Kalamazoo Singers, and this Sunday at 3 o'clock, they will present a concert called A Baroque Christmas. Rick, it's nice to see you again.
As always, Kara, it's a lot of fun to be here.
Before we started the interview, you gave me some interesting details, including the fact that the singers will be supported by a large number of instrumentalists who love to play Baroque music.
Yeah, we have an orchestra of about 20 or so. We have a little portative organ and a harpsichord for the appropriate sounds. And then the pieces vary from strings only with the Corelli Christmas Concerto all the way through what we would call almost a full orchestra today. It doesn't have trombones and some of the other more modern winds like clarinets and stuff, but it's about as full an orchestra as you would hear from Bach, and that's the wonderful, brilliant first movement of the Jauchzet, what's from the Christmas Oratorio, a Weihnachts Oratorium, and the first movement of the first of six separate cantatas, which makes up the Christmas Oratorio, is called Jauchzet Frohlocket, and it's just a tour de force of trumpets having a really good time and strings sawing their bows so fast you just can't imagine that it's possible.
There are so many things we can discuss when discussing Baroque music, but I just want to know how it makes you feel as you're rehearsing it, as you're engulfed in the Baroque style.
Well, when you're learning the German, it makes you feel stressed because it's just, this concert is all in German except for Handel's contribution, the choruses for Messiah that we're going to do. Of course, Handel himself was German, that's been actually the most stressful part, I think, for me and for the singers, is just learning all this, all these lyrics. It's one thing, you know, we're pretty fluent at five movements of the Latin Mass. You know, we could sing anybody's Latin Mass and be just fine. But if you go astray and sing something like Mozart's Vespers, all of a sudden the Latin has changed, the language hasn't changed, but the lyrics have, because it's not the mass text. So you lose that familiarity. And that's where we are with this, is whether we're singing Jauchzet Frohlocket or Wacket auf, ruft uns die Stimme, or Das Neugeborene Kindlein by Buxtehude, every single piece is different words. So there's no repetition, there's no familiarity with all of it. So that's the stressful part. But the real joy comes from the buoyancy that is in everything in Baroque. Baroque has this amazing lightness. Even if the texture gets full and busy like it does with the first movement of the Christmas Oratorio, nevertheless, it's in three. So that gives it a dance feel. It's always uplifting. It's never, you know, it's not a downtrodden, pesante, kind of heavy three. It's always a light and dancing, danceful, is that a word? Dance-like feel. And that gives it a sense of uplift, a sense of lightness, and a sense of joy that you don't get in just sort of a square four, let's say, or in pieces from either earlier or later on in the musical canon.
That sounds like an interpretive job for you, because on the page, you don't always know, you know, how to feel the tempo. And certainly in this time period, they weren't putting metronome markings anywhere. So that is part of how you approach this music, based on what you've grown up with, what you've heard before, and some decisions you can make that are brand new.
That's right. There are several factors that you know that go into choosing a tempo. All of us have this zone where it kind of feels right. I mean, I think any good musician will tell you that you can look at a page and say, this feels about X tempo, right? But then there are mechanical considerations, like can the instrumentalists physically play it that speed, or does it have to go a little bit slower? Or can the choir navigate the roulades, the melismas of For Unto Us a Child is Born? If we go at a certain speed, then no, we can't. But if we go at just the right speed, then we have that balance between a nice lively tempo that is still singable and lends itself to beautiful expression. You know, if the orchestra is brows furrowed and faces scrunched and digging in, and they're working so hard that they can't be expressive and beautiful, then it's just too fast. And if the choir has that same, you know, terrorized expression on their faces because, oh my gosh, he's going so fast today, that's a mistake, you know, then that's not good either. So it's a trade-off between what is possible, what is practical, and what is musical. And so you have to find your balance. And every one of these pieces provides that kind of challenge. You know, there's not a single piece on here that couldn't be ruined by going too fast, particularly, or too slow so that it becomes, you know, dirge-like or whatnot.
I've always had, you know, great musicians tell me that a slower tempo doesn't have to sound slow.
Yes, and we adjust that by the way we articulate, right? So, you know, when we sing For Unto Us a Child is Born, we're going to do our level best to make it clear and clean, and express the text and express the inherent lightness and bounciness, I guess, of the music without killing ourselves by going too fast or making it dirge-like. And that's all in, like I said a moment ago, it's all about the articulation. If you articulate heavily or pedantically, then it'll just sound that way. And if you articulate cleanly, lightly, softer entrances maybe, or a little separation between notes, then you'll hear the inherent buoyancy in all of this Baroque music.
In holiday concerts past, you've chosen to, you know, use music from many eras and styles and composers. But here, you're kind of living in this Baroque sound, this Baroque era. Are you finding, though, that there's great variety within these German texts and composers and what these individual composers were doing in the same time period?
Yeah. We see that each piece of Bach's is, there are similarities. Both big movements that we're doing are in three. But the feeling of the beginning of Wacht auf and the feeling of Jauchzet frohlocket from the Christmas Oratorio, the Christmas Oratorio is the first chorus, as I said, of six separate cantatas that make up what we today call the Christmas Oratorio. And it sets the stage for the entire, 3 hours worth of cantatas, separated by a couple weeks. They would have been performed over the space of a few weekends or something. And so it sets the celebratory tone like nothing else. I mean, that opening chorus is as exciting as the Et Resurrexit of the B minor mass. You know, it's that kind of just unbelievably uplifting, exciting piece. And it's a real tour de force for the violins, for the trumpets, and even the chorus. There are moments in it that are just breathtakingly hard, but also breathtakingly beautiful.
That's
but you're right. And then you have in the Wacht auf, you have that famous tune, bum ba da dum ba dum ba dum ba dum ba da dum ba dum ba dum, where all the violins and the violas all play unison together. So it's just one line of melody. And the entire chorus, it's written for a tenor or the tenor section. So either it's a soloist or a section. But I have the women and the men singing all at pitch in the tenor range. So it's going to have a very interesting tone quality. And the singers just sing the chorale melody, right? So you have all this bum ba da dum ba dum ba dum ba dum ba da dum ba dum ba dum, and the choir goes Zion hört die Wächter singen. So it's just a very long, drawn-out chorale melody juxtaposed in contrast to this amazing, I forget how long it is, this, you know, 18, 24 bars that Bach has written this incredible melody, and then he just inserts the chorale verses, or really the not even stanzas, phrases of the chorale, what we would call like the first line of hymn, and then the second line of the hymn, and the third line of the hymn. And he just spins this amazing melody around it. And everybody remembers the violin melody. Yeah. Not too many people remember the actual hymn tune.
Based on a hymn tune at the time, the congregation would have been, oh, yeah. They could sing along with that tune.
Right. They probably would have been confused by hearing all the stuff around it, the ancillary. Right. And then as soon as the boys would start singing or the tenor would start singing, then they would write, oh, I know that song. That's the Wachadauf song.
It's kind of completely flipped today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rick Phelps is my guest, director of many years standing with the Kalamazoo Singers. The concert is at 3 o'clock on Sunday at First Presbyterian Church, which hosted the Western Choral concert this last weekend and is such a beautiful venue for holiday concerts and much more.
It's a gorgeous place, and it's lovely to see it, you know, to get a lot of use. We love to see it get used year-round, but it's especially, I mean, it's such a beautiful building, and it lends itself so well to what Western does and what we're doing. It's a tremendous gift to the community that First Presbyterian Church opens itself up to be used by community choirs and so forth for events like this. We're really thankful.
It has, yeah, you almost feel like a member even if you're not part of the congregation. Yeah. You mentioned Bach, you mentioned Handel and Buxtehude. Now we're getting a little off the beaten
track. It's a little far afield. I entertained the idea, I mean, there's so many terrific Baroque composers, but obviously I was looking for specifically choral music, and I've had a long affinity for Scheidt and Schein and Schütz, and I looked for music from all three of them and didn't really find anything that I wanted to do on this concert, but I did stumble across this piece called Das Neugeborene Kindlein, the newborn little baby, obviously referring to Jesus, and I was attracted to it. It's a 7-minute work. It's quite brief. You can see in it some of what Bach might have heard when he visited Buxtehude in what was it, Lübeck?
Isn't there a famous story here?
There's a famous story. Yes. So. Bach asked for a leave of a month to walk like 250 miles into North Germany to see Buxtehude. Buxtehude was in his 60s, maybe 69 years old or something like that. Bach was about 20, and he walked the entire way up there, and he wanted to hear what Buxtehude was doing. We think that maybe Bach didn't know that Buxtehude in the month of December, Advent, had several major concerts planned. Now, in Advent, you couldn't do music during the church services. So there'd be a morning service and then a later service. But then, in a non-service, Buxtehude would put on a massive concert later, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, whatever. And so we think that attracted Bach and caused him to overstay his his leave. He was supposed to be absent for the month of November. Well, he stayed through December and January. And anyway, he stayed like 4 months. But the evidence seems compelling that when he heard those large-scale orchestral choral works that Buxtehude kind of snuck in under the rug, if you want to say, you know, in these late afternoon Advent concerts, that the influence is unmistakable. And I don't know if this piece that we're doing, I haven't been able to find out, was one of those pieces on, you know, the Buxtehude program during that month of December. Might have been. Certainly might have been. And there are definitely elements that you can hear in it that make you think ahead to Bach.
Would like to spend the last few minutes asking you about future concerts, but I give you a little moment to see if there's any final details to share about Sunday.
Well, I guess you can't have a concert called a Baroque Christmas without saying that if you come see the concert, you won't go Baroque. We'll go for Baroque, but you won't go Baroque. There's always a pun. Ever since I first learned that word in high school, you know, my high school choir director would always pun on the term Baroque, and it's one of those things that
it won't quit.
So there you go. There's your pun for the day. But yeah, looking forward beyond this concert, we've got coming up our middle concert in March is called A Festival Song, and it is a kind of a smorgasbord of pieces that choirs around Michigan, school choirs, middle school, junior high school choirs, have been singing that I've heard over the last several years at choral festival. You know, some of them are just a study in simplicity and beauty, and some of them are tremendous challenges and great, you know, statements of what high school and middle school choirs can do in terms of powerful, emotive, beautiful music. So we will hear some really, really wonderful pieces, some brand new stuff that's kind of, you know how festivals go. Some pieces get popular and you hear them a lot, but you also hear pieces that have been sung at festivals for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. So you'll get to hear pieces from at least, I would say, a couple hundred year span.
This comes out of your experience as an adjudicator.
Sure.
As well, it seems like bringing these pieces to an adult choir gives the choir members sort of a new lease on life with a fresh repertoire, and a way also for the new pieces to continue to grow outside the school community.
Right. You know, some of our singers, if not all of them, will have had experience singing in their own high school or middle school program. They will have attended festival. They will know the nervousness of sitting in the sight reading room, you know, trying to do their best performance. They will know the butterflies of going on stage. And they'll recognize, they will know some of this music because they will have sung it or have heard it from when they were in school. So that's one thing.
Okay. So some memories as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's one thing. And then another thing is that they will recognize just the quality of literature that's being sung around the state, right? It's not just, most directors in this state do not just pick a song or two or three, whatever the requirement is, just to get by. You know, most of these high school, middle school, junior high choir directors are trying to be good music educators. They're trying to bring the very best to their students. They're trying to use music as a teaching tool for understanding human expression. Bands do it through band music, orchestras, orchestra music, choirs through, you know, great texts married to great music. And so our singers will experience just what the high school singers around the state have been, you know, singing for ages, or just from the last year or two, if it's a brand new piece.
Sure to be an eye-opening kind of concert.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be really cool. And then at the end of the year, we're going to be putting on a really enjoyable concert. I've wanted to do this for years. I have a list of programs, that, you know, possible programs down the line in the future, and I'll never do them all because there are many more ideas than I have concerts and seasons and years ahead of me. One of them, this one, is called O Canada, and it's just a celebration of Canadian choral music. There's been a wonderful resurgence of, maybe not resurgence, maybe the first surgence. I don't know if that's a word.
Insurgence?
But there's just been an explosive growth of wonderful music, either newly composed, like John Washburn in Vancouver Chamber Choir. Terrific conductor, wonderful composer in his own right, or people writing arrangements of folk songs. And, you know, America, the United States of America, has a tremendous body of folk song that we sang a concert last year. Right?
You could explore it forever.
Absolutely. and the Canadians, likewise. French Canadian music, you've got Scottish music, Nova Scotia, you've got Irish music over here, you've got, but then it takes on its own flavor. So when you sing a song from Newfoundland or from PEI or from Ontario, you get all these different places have their own folk song expression, but it definitely comes out of these communities of people that came over from mostly from Europe who brought with them songs and made new ones. And that music has been captured by just this wonderful, wonderful list of Canadian composers. Oh,
you may not know this, but I grew up in Northern Canada, then moved to the United States. And Canada is really not a topic of conversation among Americans. I'm so excited to see an entire concert program called O Canada that focuses on some of the creative output of a terrific nation right just north of us.
I mean, that's right.
Well, just east of us here in
or
Michigan.
South or in, south. In Detroit with Windsor.
That's right.
So where did you grow up?
Northern British Columbia on the border of BC and Alberta in a town called Dawson Creek.
Oh, I've been there.
Have you? That's remarkable.
Yeah, my dad and brother and I drove to Alaska a couple years ago.
That's mile zero.
And so, absolutely. And so that's where we... That's where we finished our official drive of the what's now called the Alaska Highway. When Dad was growing up, it was the Alcan. But yeah, we took a picture right there at the monument marking it. But we drove all the way to Western BC and then up the, I think it's called the Cassiar Highway, up to Watson Lake and then to
Rick, that's an epic
Alaska
adventure.
And back. Oh, it was. It absolutely was. Unfortunately, I can't say that there will be any music from Dawson Creek on the concert, but perhaps you could connect us with somebody.
Yeah,
there.
I actually couldn't think of any. I don't know. This is great. I think we have to leave it here, but I want to remind listeners that A Baroque Christmas starts at 3:00 this Sunday at First Presbyterian Church in downtown Kalamazoo, and the Kalamazoo Singers can be found at kalamazoosingers.org. Thank you, Rick.
My pleasure. Thanks.